David Brown. Cameron Chappell. Jason Tribierko.
Present.
Coral Douglas.
Hi, I'm on Zoom.
Andy Garcia Ortiz.
Present.
Irene Gutimi.
Present.
Alicia George.
Here.
Dinesh
Present.
Kumar. Srinika
Present.
Mac James.
Here.
Ayushi Kapoor.
Hi, present on Zoom.
Srikanth, or yeah, Srikanth Ocean Kareem.
Present.
Anurag Koyada.
Present.
Abel Agressa.
Present.
Alex Lando.
Present.
Zhongyan Liu.
Present.
Xander Lynch.
Present.
Salman Matan.
Present.
Clarice Meffert.
Present.
Tien Nguyen. Kunj Patel. Angel Puder.
Here.
Simset. Cindy Wong. Yu Tsing Wu.
Present.
Hong Xiao.
That's Jenny.
Cameron just walked in.
Yeah.
And,
Then the two new vet school reps.
that's Alicia Basquiat, Sarah Raimondi. Okay. So that's. But Jessica, do you know the number of voting members? Okay. I did this in a funny way, so now I have to do some traction.
It is, I just put it in. And the website is currently set, it doesn't have to change the bed. That's simple.
So I that should be 29 that we have.
21 in total or
29.
29 here.
Here.
Here. I'm gonna call that four. Yeah, because 29 is a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't put that in meeting minutes. Anyways. Yay, with that, we'll now go into our next order of business, which is approval of December 2nd meeting minutes. You know the drill. So just take a look at the meeting minutes and I'll be entertaining a motion on the discussion on those.
Can I make a motion to amend the minute to reflect that the Lynch is elected to be one of three CPSA representatives to the Bigger Farm Planning Committee? We still want to take.
All right, sounds good. Is there a second to that?
Seconded.
Any objections? Seeing none. Great. That motion has been adopted. Yes.
Motion to adopt the minutes by.
All right, motion to adopt the minutes has been made. Is there a second? Any objections? Seeing no objections, unanimous consent is granted. Great. The minutes are done, dusted out of this world. We'll now move into reports of our office and committee updates. Of course, we have a very excited committee.
Hello. Hi. Hi all. It's been a little bit. Good to see everybody back together. The executive committee met last week. We focused on catching each other up on the IB Plus Summit, which was recently held in Dartmouth, as well as all the other updates mostly that we're hearing from the committee. We've kind of made it a priority last semester and pushing it into this semester that more of the business happens in all the other committees and less of it happens in the executive committee. So with that, no further update.
If you also want to do the
Oh, yes. And I'll pass the ocean to update the assembly on the response from President Kolpakov on resolutions 4 and 5.
Hi, everyone. So as a reminder, resolution 4 was recommendations regarding the CCEA express activity policy draft. We sent it over after getting it passed within GPSA, and President Kolpakov has said, thank you for conveying to me the policy. I'm grateful for the thoughtful care and attention with which the GPSA reviewed the express activity policy draft and the work that the GPSA did to share their perspective and proposed edits with Dean Barry and the committee. Thank you again to all involved in this critical effort of shared governance. Sincerely, Michael Kolpakov. In addition to that, after receiving that email, we have also been part of a few meetings with the board of trustees and a few other communications in regards to the policy. So there have been some work and discussions during the break as well with many foreign people, but this will also be brought up later in today's meeting with our resolution number 6, which we'll get to later on. In terms of resolution five, as a reminder, is the GPSA's recommendations on Cornell University's disciplinary actions for its graduate student worker, Shiran Parasurama. In it, President Kolpakov says the same remarks of thank you for sharing this, and also mentions that the Federal Family Education Rights and Privacy Act, or FERPA, protects the records of individual students, and therefore he cannot speak on to an individual student's specific conduct matter, but can say that in all student conduct cases, without exception, the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards follows the Student Code of Conduct and Code of Procedures, and its Student Code and Code of Procedures clearly lay out expectations for personal responsibility for behavior by Cornelians, provide all student respondents with robust process rights, including the right to review all relevant evidence collected during the investigation, and provide the university with appropriate mechanisms to protect the university community. Just a reiteration, essentially, that they're going through the case with the standard procedures we have to develop the policies. Those are responses that the interim president has given to us. Do we have any questions, comments, and or concerns? Yes.
So is the response, I'm acknowledging that the response to resolution 4 was that was presumably positive, but then the resolution or the acknowledgement to resolution 5 was more so an acknowledgement of proceeding with procedures as do fit. So it's just, there was nothing more than we cannot really speak on that, but we will let you know that we are doing what we have tend to do with cases with students of such. So it's just kind of like a status quo remark.
Essentially, if we boil it down to the simplest of details, that appears to be the case.
Right? Okay, thank you.
Of course. Yes.
I just want to understand the expectation here. Is it the norm to just say thank you for whatever resolution that you pass, or have presidents in the past commented on some of the resolutions?
It is typically the norm that the president or interim president would be saying thank you. There may be some instances in which they would provide additional comments, which isn't too often, but in this case, we did get some comments. So it'd be important for us to share with y'all that these are the updates that we've received on passage of the resolutions. All right. Any other questions, comments, and or concerns? Yes.
Andy.
Yep. Oh,
yeah. Or Michelle. It's
yes.
Michelle. Sorry, Andy. You're literally here.
Michelle, are you here with us?
I am here. Can you all hear me?
We can hear you. Well, it's a little quiet, but I can hear you.
Okay. I was wondering if there would be a formal response from President Kolpakov on these resolutions, and if there was any acknowledgement on resolution 5 to the first be therefore resolved clause, which requested, I guess, is the assumption that a request for a halt on disciplinary measures falls under the, did he refer to FERPA? Sorry.
I don't know if there was a official like throughout the entire campus kind of statement of some sorts. This is just the comments that President Kolpakov has directed to us upon sending the resolution to them.
And to answer the other part of your question, Michelle, yeah, he did invoke FERPA. And just to correct me if I'm wrong, but all the president's remarks are also included on the website or responded to?
Yes, they will be. We are training our secretariat tomorrow. So after tomorrow afternoon, these will be on the website.
Perfect. Okay.
All right, thank you.
Of course. All right, if there are no other questions, comments, and concerns, we'll now move into our operations staffing committee.
Hello. Sorry, who's gazing at the wall? Normally it's this way. okay, so this semester, operations and staffing, our main concern is going to be bylaw revisions, which Jessica is back there cheering for, I'm sure. And so this will, our plan is to do this in two rounds. So the first round is going to be sections 3 and 4 of our bylaws, which will mostly just be abbreviating a currently very lengthy document that has a lot of repetition by cutting out repetitions of the same things and just making making things that are repeated blanket statements for all committees and standard operating procedures. So that's and then section four has some systems that are no longer used, haven't been used since like pre-COVID or maybe even earlier than that. And so we will be getting rid of those mentions completely, which really won't affect anything because we're not doing it anyway. Other than that, we will continue. So the first of those set of bills will be at the next meeting, where we're finalizing within operations the first of those bills, and then we don't have a timeline for section 5, which is more about specific committee duties and specific committee operating procedures. So that'll be a bit that'll require a bit more care. And we'll make sure that that goes to the general committee for discussion before we make any drastic changes, because that's actually about the committees themselves. Julie. Oh yes. The other thing is, so we are trying to keep better track of who is coming and who is like falling out of the GPSA like realm. So we did send out an email last night to anybody who was in danger of being unseated, which happens when you miss more than your 2 allowed meetings in a semester. So we did send that out. If you didn't receive the email, you're all good. If you already replied, you're all good. Just something we wanted to put out there and make sure people were aware of.
And if I could add, it's not meant to be scary. It's a simple email asking, hey, are you still going to be involved in GPSA this semester? If not, would you mind passing the baton to somebody who might be able to fill the seat? So, simple.
And other than that, I think it's just going to be the typical external roles that we're going to be trying to fill. Although, I don't think we have any for this time. So, yeah.
Sorry, I put the rice in my mouth. Hi. And with that, any questions, comments, concerns? Seeing none, we'll now move into our appropriations committee. No updates in general for appropriations committee, so move into our communications committee.
Hello, everyone. Hope everyone had a sort of holiday. Nothing too major. Something that is going to be implemented following, not the next communique, is whenever we have like events like the gala, we're going to link a campus group, so it should streamline your guys' ability to like, enroll for things like that and just see the details.
If there are no questions, we'll now move into our Finance Commission committee. Hello.
Hi everyone. The only main update is that we sent out funding for new clubs that were founded last semester and one for the field, so there are about 40 of those. And yeah, there were some that wanted to be demoted, which was fun. But beyond that, what updates?
Any questions for our Finance Commission chair? Seeing none, we'll now move into our Student Advocacy Committee chair.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, everyone. As you guys probably know from the agenda, we've been working on an official response to the revised expressive policy that the committee has submitted to the president. So we're really looking forward to your comments. We're also meeting more regularly. So if there are any thoughts or any actions that you think we should be including within the review of the committee, either then or you can set up one on one.
There are no questions when I move into our Diversity International Students Committee.
Yeah, hi everyone. Hope you all had a great break. So a couple of updates from our side. DISC is gonna be collaborating with OGL to release out a service that's gonna be a little broader than whatever we have been doing. It has like 12 to 13 topics and recently been included the first gen data that needs to be out there. The apart from that, we'll be having a representative from DISC on the supplementary orientation that Office of Global Learning is hosting. I'll send the poster to Andy to be out on the Instagram. So if you want more information about resources, be there. Apart from that, I emailed Jessica for a new connection at Cornell Dining. So we are going to discuss that for a position within the DISC team. So if anyone is interested, I'm more than happy to chat about that in detail. And lastly, our weekly meetings are going to be from 5 to 6 on every Tuesday. So whoever is interested is more than welcome to attend. So yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Have any questions for Alicia? Seeing none, we'll now move into our programming board chair.
All right, everybody. So as spoken, gala theme is Old Hollywood. We have solidified a date and location, which is May 8th, 2025 at the Statler Ballroom. And then finally, our next programming board meeting is next Monday at 6:45. So if you'd like to come, let me know.
Yay. Come to the gala, y'all. I'll be there. Anyways, if there's no questions, comments, and or concerns, we'll then move into our FATMAC committee or Faculty and Teaching Advising and Mentorship Award Committee.
Hello, it's me. Hello. I hope, as everyone said, you had a relatively restorative break, at least for me. You may have seen on the last communique a call for nominations for professors. If you or any of your lab mates or even Cornell friends have a faculty, graduate student, postdoc, whoever, who you feel is worth nominating for the contribution to Cornell's community, feel free to look at that link on the communique and send it on in. Otherwise, we are having our next meeting on Tuesday, February 4th, 2:15 at the fancy schmancy building known as Biotech. And if you actually want the building or the number, it's 371, but otherwise, keep on keeping on.
Seeing no questions, comments, nor concerns, we're going to move into our last, but definitely not least, committee update, and that would be the graduate school.
Hello, everyone. I think the most relevant update is that we're moving into the final stages of filling two positions in our career development and professional development office. And we've got interviews coming up very soon, and we appreciate the input that folks have given us to this date. So we're really excited about getting that office up and running. And we're in the early stages of talking about expanding our academic advising elements in the graduate school. And you'll stay tuned for more of those as we go.
All right, and with that, we'll now move into our next order of business, which is legislations. As it currently stands, we have one resolution up, Resolution 6, or the response to December 18th, 2024, CZEA Finance Resolution Policy Recommendations. We have five sponsors. Do we have one of the sponsors available to present a speech in regards to this resolution? It could be all of y'all. At least one of y'all. Sure. All right, front and center. And for the record, everyone should be able to have the resolution. It's available on the community as well as inbox. So and also on the physical thing itself. At least, yep, it is. Page, oh, wow, these page. You know the drill.
Hey, everyone. So this is in response to what the draft committee sent out. So they were here, they took recommendations, and this was released, I believe, on 28th of December. So this resolution is essentially our response based on what we have read. I've also attached the email and the PDFs. So based on their recommendations, we don't think that enough changes are being made. There's a lot of acknowledgement that's being made, especially when we talk about certain criteria, but there isn't a lot of changes. So this response is something that we drafted to communicate our dissatisfaction, essentially. So we'll be going through the more serious kind of sections. But again, this is something that we did not expect because we thought we were doing really great with the resolution that we sent. We provided them 9 edits, like you can imagine. But we noticed that almost none, if any, were incorporated, which has been pretty disappointing.
Maybe just to refresh everyone on where we are now and what we've done so far. So on October, and this is the first paragraph of the statement, if you'd like to read along. On October 31st, the Cornell Committee on Expressive Activities distributed a draft expressive activity policy to the Cornell community, including a memo which outlined the committee's key values and explanations for policy choices. Weighing the proposed memo and policy, the Graduate Professional Student Assembly voted on December 2nd, that was our last meeting, to advance a comprehensive list of recommendations in response to the CCEA's proposed policy centered around supporting rights of students to participate in free expression. Today, the GPSA acknowledges the recommendation submitted by the CCEA as of December 18th and addresses several items unanswered by the current recommendation. Those are disruptive activity, the extent of special setting, content neutrality, masking, hate speech, and the integrity of policy drafting and review process. And so what follows is we'll just briefly describe some of these sections. On the topic of disruptive activity, we still call into consideration the lack of a very concrete definition for disrupt that doesn't rely on the use of the word inhibit. And we also call for a more thorough consideration of the autonomy of those who claim to be disrupted by disruptive activity. For example, being able to find a new study space or move across campus and find a new route to class. On the topic of special settings, we essentially contend our previous point, which is that the designation of so many special settings with so few carve-outs amounts to a near total prohibition of spontaneous protest on campus. And we reiterate a recommendation for a more concrete definition of disruptive to help cut back on that. On the topic of content neutrality, we, reflecting on the current policy and the memo, we state that we recognize the policy doesn't require that expressive activity is neutral in viewpoint, but we still believe that the application of content neutrality is not necessarily content neutral. For example, the committee simultaneously maintains both, one, that policies governing non-expressive activities also generally apply to expressive activities, and two, that provisions which pertain to activities do not belong in the expressive activities policy. Deciding whether or not an activity has expressive value, we believe to be not a content neutral decision to be made by administrators. And in that way, expressive activities become doubly damned by both existing university policy and the new expressive activity policy. I'll pass it on.
So there's also a section on masking, which would grant CU the authority to request anyone on campus to briefly unmask by their request. That includes facial coverings. So we are asserting that that should not be allowed, as it could give undue power to allow for discrimination against individuals and grants permission to the university to violate people's beliefs. This assembly holds that the Cornell's foundations in diversity and inclusion and interest in promoting a community of belonging should not permit a policy that would offer opportunities for discrimination to be so openly within an institution. Additionally, we assert that no policy should absolve Cornell of its responsibility to its students. Currently, we just want to make sure that students feel protected from hate speech, and we affirm the university's responsibility to curtail hate speech, both for the safety of its students and for the pursuance of our core educational mission.
Additionally, we had some concerns regarding the integrity of the process of drafting this policy. And these stem from a couple of things. So I'm just going to read the first and last paragraph because I think it generally of that section. So while GPSA expresses gratitude for the CCEA's thorough consideration on the subject matter surrounding free expression, the Assembly is gravely disappointed with the overall limited extent to which serious critical feedback was channeled into the CCEA's response. The GPSA expresses dismay for the example set for shared governance at Cornell by the limited extent to which serious policy points raised, approved by full Assembly, were apparently ignored or dismissed. Similarly, errant and ostentatious referrals to great civil rights leaders within a document that outlines policies that are antithetical to the realities of their struggles only further the perception that the invocation of democratic and restorative justice principles, including the collection of community feedback, is largely performative. To expand on that little piece there, I took particular issue with this invocation of these civil rights leaders because the way they did it feels very much like they're using it as a way to justify unjust policies historically. And if we look a little bit more deeply into what they were protesting, those policies, those laws, those rules that they weren't abiding by, that they were punished for violating, were unjust, unconstitutional, and morally wrong. As it's stated in the CCEA's report policy, that as an institution dedicated to learning, Cornell is committed to supporting those who question and challenge what they perceive as unjust uses of power. In passing GPSA Resolution 4, recommendations regarding CCEA's expressive activity policy draft, GPSA has, through democratic means, attempted to bring forth broad community concerns regarding the ways in which the expressive activity policy has potential to empower unjust uses of power. The CCEA's memo aiming to justify the contents of the report and explain the dismissal of these concerns was insufficient. We're requesting the promised support and recognition of our efforts to challenge the document, which we perceive as enabling potentially unjust uses of power.
All right, thank you so much, all of y'all. We'll now go into our questioning period. This is an opportunity for everyone to ask the sponsors any questions that they have regarding this resolution. There's no time limits enforcing yet because we have a good amount of time and stuff. But just anyone have any questions, you may raise your pocket. Yes,
so it's not a question, it's a comment. On the third paragraph of integrative policy drafting and review process, the way how Gandhi was spelled, it's G-A-N-D-H-I. So I think that has to be like changed, right? Yes, like a small comment.
Have any questions in general? Yes, Alexander.
I know that we spoke about it briefly before the meeting started, but I wanted to reiterate my question on exactly what purpose it serves to reiterate the statement, because they're not, according to what I know, they're not revising the policy of any.
If I could say, yeah, so you bring up an important point, which is where does this fall in, like, actual decision making. So the committee, as speaking to its committee chair, Dean Barry, is essentially complete with its charge, which was to produce a set of recommendations to the president, his cabinet, the trustees, regarding the expressive activity policy. So those recommendations have been finalized and they've been sent out to everybody, but they're still recommendations. As of yet, there has not been an official long-standing, like, permanent policy put into place. And so this is GPSA getting one more word in before an official policy is kind of made the law of the land. And I know that the Board of Trustees is meeting Wednesday in New York. It's kind of expected, though this is hearsay, that, you know, a policy is imminent, or at least discussion of one is getting more and more serious. And so in reiterating this, this is us essentially saying, okay, we've read the memo, we've read the new policy, we're not certain that the concerns were met yet. This is what we think is outstanding. But we do acknowledge in the beginning of this, which we didn't touch on, some significant changes that were made in response to GPSA feedback and the advocacy of graduate students who were serving on that committee. And if I can just take a moment to point those out, which involve most notably, I'm looking at the third paragraph on the first page of the statement. There was a major reworking of the masking policy, which it remained. However, it restricted requests of unmasking to lawful demands, which had previously been essentially unspecified requests by university personnel. That was section 5.12. It also fully removed the recommendation, which avoided the university's obligation to prevent hate speech by removing the hate speech section in its entirety. Although still not commenting on whether or not the university does have an affirmative obligation. And then the last point I'll say is they made some effort to clarify their stance on spontaneous protests by removing their spontaneous protest section, which had previously given the appearance of limiting all spontaneous protests to home laws. I hope that clarifies things.
Taking any other questions? Yes. Name again?
I'm Sarah. I'm one of the new veterinary medicine representatives.
Sarah, last name?
Raymondi.
Raymond. Got it. Just keeping the record.
So I'm like a little bit concerned about the part where you guys say, in particular, CCA's policy seems to altogether ignore the autonomy of those who are inconvenienced by expressive activity, with options ranging from relocating into a new study space to selecting a different route to class. First, like, university's purpose is for students to come and study, and that is going to be a priority to protect for students to learn and do research and those kind of things. And I mean, just like telling someone to leave, essentially, it kind of feels like by doing this. I wouldn't feel particularly comfortable if any like right-wing group were to come on campus and like start.
Apologies. Do you have a question?
I guess my question is like, I think this, I don't know, maybe more of a comment a little bit, but I think this is a little bit insensitive to how people are affected by like disruptive activities. Any kind, particularly those with hateful language. And additionally, it kind of gives a vibe of, like, just leave instead if you don't like it. And I don't think that's appropriate.
I don't know if this is necessarily a question of some sort. So I guess I'll recognize it as a bit of a discussion point essentially.
Yeah.
The sponsors have the opportunity to respond to the statement if they wish to, or they can leave it up during the discussion period up to any of y'all.
Yeah, this was actually a point that was brought up to me by a community member, and I'll clarify the intention of that particular line with the sentence right after it, which states, should disruptive expressive activity for which there exist easy workarounds be treated the same as disruptive activity for which there are no such options? So this is not a blanket statement like, oh, if there's disruptive activity on campus, like, go figure it out yourself. This is a, okay, there is expressive activity, somebody is finding it disruptive. Remember, we're working under no clear definition of what a true disruption is and what it means to impede university function. And so with that in mind, what are the limitations to what is disruptive? It's really getting back to that point about, is it a disruption if it's like I have to take, you know, an extra 200 feet to get to class, or is it a disruption if, you know, I physically can't get into the building, or it's going to take me 20 minutes to get into the building it used to take me a minute to get into. So, of course, not completely trying to diminish the fact that, you know, disruptions aren't nice, but I mean, I think, and also in the beginning of this policy, we state that our goal is to really create a framework of a sense of community values. And I think that is, in my perspective, being reasonable with one another. There are students who want to protest, and we should give them reasonable space to do so. And likewise, if we are protesting, that we should give our peers reasonable space to go about their daily lives. But again, it's really debating what is reasonable enough. Then I gotta get up the camera.
Yeah, I just had a question, not to harp on grammar anymore, but under the hate speech section, the first section of the first paragraph, says while the assembly can appreciate Thoreau's commitment to not silencing voices in the minority, we firmly reassert that no policy cannot absolve Cornell of its responsibility to its students. Would that be a double negative? And okay, cannot would be can. Just to get it, that's like important.
There's the one negative speech section. Wait, all right, any other questions? Yes.
I just like honest, but the like part where we're defining them, like again, trying to be more specific about disruption and like defining, you know, what if easy work around, read it, saying that's for which there's no like work around. I feel like that opens up a gray area of, you know, what is easy versus not. Sure, maybe it's easy to take, you know, a different path to get to class. But maybe that acts on time to your trip and you end up late to class. Or maybe it's a situation where mentally knowing that that is like right near and you have to actively work to go around it. I don't think like as for a community that already struggles with mental health, and the university doesn't really have a lot of resources to support it as it stands, I don't think that's such a great decision.
It's still recognized as a discussion point rather than a question, but duly noted, sponsors can respond to the English or leave it for discussion period.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about making the distinction between disruptive activity and inconvenience, when you look at what's happening on campus with respect to construction, we are being quote unquote disruptive, right? We do need to take workarounds to enter the campus building because of construction that happens. I know that there are a lot of students right here in this room whose research has been delayed by X number of months because there was something happening. So is that disruption or is that inconvenience? If it is just an inconvenience, why are expressive activity disruptive and these actions not disruptive? So that was the lens in which we tried to frame this particular response. But again, we are open to maybe changing the language a little bit, but that was the intention behind requesting, hey, can you tell us what is inconvenienced and what is disruptive? Because as it stands today, it seems that only expressive action is deemed disruptive, whereas everything else, any other concessions that students have to make to enter buildings for their mental health is merely seen as an inconvenience.
Do we have any other questions before moving to the discussion? Seeing no questions, okay, cool. We'll now move into discussion period. Difference between question period and discussion period is that where question period you can ask the sponsors directly, like if you have any lingering questions or confusion points within the resolution. Discussion period, you can now actually say like this, why I think we should be passing or negating this resolution essentially. This is a time where you can directly express your shared thoughts on things. And also in contrast with the question period, which would favor the sponsors to be able to respond immediately and stuff, precedence and recency will be further established during the discussion period, where people who have not spoken at all would have higher priority. And then if there's an equal amount of people that have spoken an equal amount of times, those that have spoken earlier would be given higher priority to when they speak. And that is to allow more equity and diversity in those that are contributing to all debate and stuff. Same thing as this last year, but just want to make sure that's all clear because it's the first meeting again. So yeah, discussion points. If anyone has anything they'd like to say or express on this expressive activity policy resolution, how fitting, please raise your hands or placards. Yes, Sarah.
Yeah, so I feel like the difference between, I guess we should ask them, I guess, to define it a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Between like stuff that's disruptive in terms of like construction versus like disruptive protests that, you know, could have negative impacts on people's lives. It's like construction doesn't tell someone that they, you know, either don't belong at Cornell or are a problem to society because they're a minority, whereas like
a lot of times there are protests that do that. So I just think that, I don't know, it feels a little bit inconsiderate to people's feelings on campus, making it like this. I know that in an ideal world, when you go to protest, you think about other people's feelings and that they have to study in class, but when you're really heated and passionate about a problem, that's, you're probably not, let's be honest, you're probably not thinking of another person. I know when I'm really passionate about something and, you know, it's hard for me to take a moment and listen to my mind. So I think that we have to think about the humanness of people to think of themselves and their own interests above others.
Thank you. All right. I also just want to mention that no time limits for discussion period has been given yet. I think I'll admit one if we are going a little too much into it and stuff and still haven't come to consensus. But people can also motion for a time limit if they wish to. Just want to put out there. But as it stands, no time limit has been recognized until I think that's out, I guess. Feel free to raise your placard if you wish to speak. All right, Jason.
So I just wanted to ask a clarifying question to some of the points you've mentioned. So one of the things that I feel, and again, I have not had any particular hand in responding to the policy, but for me, one of the things that the policy means most is appealing, or at least broadly being applicable to most people on campus. Of course, you'll always have exceptions to any particular rule. All protests are not the best kind of examples of any kind of political spectrum, but is the issue that you have the possibility of bad being done under this policy in the sense that, oh, maybe some people are negative actors or bad actors, and under this policy, they would be protected or otherwise would not actively be able to be like stopped? Because I don't think that's necessarily something that anyone on this panel or who put the legislation through is thinking about. It's just a broad application of what is the understanding of the like ways that people can protest reasonably and how would that impact others. Hopefully that was coherent.
Seeing that this comment was directed towards Sarah Mandy, you have the opportunity to respond if you wish.
Yeah, I think that just like making it, I don't know, like your physical situation opens up a can of worms, especially for like specifically hate groups that have been pushed off campus. And I feel like with this, the political climate currently, there's a lot of like hate for universities, particularly those that teach different things and encourage diversity, equity, and inclusion specifically. So I'm worried that like you're going to have people come and do more negative things should this kind of policy be collapsed.
I have a point of information.
Yes.
I would just like to read that this bill states the assembly reaffirms the university's responsibility to curtail hate speech, both for the safety of students and for students on for education.
Thank you. Do we have any other discussion points on this resolution? All right. You over to Mohammed. Yes.
I suppose when I'm thinking about this expressive activity policy or the implementation of expressive activity policy, and we want to think about people's humanity, and we want to respect people's humanity, I think this policy is much more in service of just maintaining order than it does in valuing the community that we have. If we talk about people feeling unwelcome as a result of expressive activity, to be frank, I think I've grown up feeling unwelcome as a result of application or unjust application of law and rules to my community. And that's not a feeling that's unique to me. And so I think the way this policy is written needs to contend with the asymmetry between the those that are being disciplined and those that are doling out the discipline. Before we can really even talk about how what is like the perfect conditions that we can build on campus. And I don't think we've done that to date, unfortunately. There requires a whole lot more trust, I think, for a policy like this to be, and trust and just clarity, I think, for this policy to be written and shared in a way that's welcomed by the community, and that I think that would actually have a positive impact on anyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark, for drawing that out. I just want to put like a point of order out there. The GPSA didn't write the policy. We're writing our recommendations on the policy. So I think we're all on the same side of like, hey, we need more color around this to make sure like terms that are being used, terms that are being used a lot in the actual policy are very unclear. And for situations on both sides of the spectrum of what we discussed today, GPSA wants to see those better delineated in a more equitable way. So I actually think we're kind of all on the same page, but just wanted to have a refresher. I know we haven't seen each other in a few weeks. So.
Thank you. Do you have any other discussion points? Yes, kind of.
I have a question. This is aside from the point that's been going on here, but in regards to the masking point, I think I'm generally curious as to, I assume part of the reasoning for implementing the policy to remove the mask is to protect the university community potentially. I'm sure that's not the entirety of it, but in part to protect the university community from any outside individuals coming onto campus that may not necessarily be students or staff or any sort of those bad actors that had been mentioned earlier, anyone who starts to go against more explicit university policy lines or legal lines. And I recognize that I do agree that it's fair to say that that we should not be asking people to remove their masks due to any sort of health or religious reasons. I'm just curious as to whether we have necessarily any other recommendations for any of those actors that the city police wants to identify, or how to protect both the people expressing their expressive activity and other students and individuals on campus from anyone who were to take advantage of this lack of masking policy.
Thank you. Based on that, another new one? Yes. Hi, what's your name?
Sam Sokolow, from the organization Front of Planners. I was curious about the delineation, like in terms of hate speech between like a oppressed minority group or any minority group whatsoever and a nationality group. Like I've kind of, because I've seen images, I guess, like in protests and whatnot, where it's like there's like a snake with like American flag teeth and then like a Star of David on the snake, and then it's like getting stabbed by like a Lebanese flag. And it's like, is that a protest against Israel or is it a protest against like Jewish people? Like I assume it's an Israel protest, right? But it's like, I guess what I'm trying to get at is hate speech. Is there anything in the policy or anything that's been written here that like kind of delineates what is, are nationality groups more protected than religious groups or ethnic groups, or what, like, how do you work around that? Because it seems like a lot of the base of the argument, at least from what I can tell in the media, is okay, what is criticism of Zionism or what is criticism of like Jewish people ethnically or Jewish people religiously? And I was curious if there's like any sort of discussion. I know I'm new here, but I just reading it does feel a bit, feels like a very short paragraph relative to the scope and the part of the issue.
Based off of recency, it actually go to Mac.
Yeah, so quickly on the previous discussed topic of the masking, the last time we had the conversation, especially when we had the panel here that was actually drafting the document, so we discussed with them the fact that if the police actually needed to identify somebody because somebody was breaking the law and was under arrest, they could do so. In terms of, you brought up the perfect word, bad actors. Some of us in this room, if we were in certain environments, would be more assumed to be bad actors than others. So the fact that somebody can go and say, hey, take off your mask. If you don't, then there's nothing that we can put in policy for the police to do that. Oh, they said, no, we can't do it. So we write it in. We're basically saying, hey, we're adjusting the laws of New York State of the United States of America that the police at Cornell University or in Ithaca can just go up to anybody, and it's seen as hostile if you don't take your mask off, it, especially with the fact that they can walk up to people and say, hey, can I see your ID? There's just so have a civil conversation. There's just so many different steps without that implicit bias in place. Again, there's very reasonably a lot of people in here wouldn't be seen as much of a bad actor in certain situations like myself or other groups of people. And it's just a point where it's like, hey, if somebody's breaking the law, then they need to take, there's nothing we can write into a policy from a university that's like going to stop somebody or make somebody get arrested. That's their rules already. So why do we need to have it in our rules to give them even more leeway that isn't honestly legal or moral? Not to steal the phone number.
Thank you for that. All right. Based on recency, it will go to Trinico.
Yeah, just to echo Max's point, if there were bad actors, the policy in general gives undue power to Cornell PD, who are not a part of Ithaca Police Department. So if there was something happening in the cops camp, the power to ask for unmasking should and would not lie within Cornell PD. It would have to be for Ithaca, like the Ithaca Police Department. So that was another kind of criticism that we included in our previous resolution, where we said that there was clear distinction being made between already existing laws, like federal laws, and special powers that the university just gave itself. And that was something that we wanted to point out. And to your point about hate speech, within the policy, it, again, please correct me if I'm wrong, it completely absolves the university of any responsibility towards hate speech. And we are saying that that's not acceptable. And again, this is with respect to a response to the existing policy, which again, to your very good point, does not make those distinctions. So it's saying that, hey, Cornell has the responsibility towards the students to protect it from certain kind of hate speech, hopefully will kind of motivate the university to build those definitions in there, just so that it's a more robust policy in general.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm just reading a section about hate speech more, and I'm a bit concerned by the use of the word curtail, like the assembly reaffirms the university's responsibility to curtail hate speech. So there are many things that can be done about hate speech. For example, you can use speech to fight other speech, right? And I'm a bit worried that because hate speech is so poorly defined, the phrase that let's curtail it, like let's reduce hate speech, can be used in all kinds of ways towards all kinds of people. Would it be better to say just like protect, like rather than saying like let's remove this hate speech we don't want, is it possible to phrase something about like protecting people affected by hate speech instead of just removing what you don't want to hear? Like these are two completely different concepts, and I'm a bit worried that they're all kind of mixed together in here.
Before we go to another point, it's about to be 6 o'clock. I know that this is the only thing that we have for today's meeting, but I will be instituting a time limit now. Discussion period, each person can have 1 minute of speaking time. You can have as many speaking times as possible. It's just gonna be like when it's your turn again. One tap when you have 30 seconds remaining, two taps when you have 10 seconds remaining, and I'm just gonna cut you off from there and move on to the next person. Just so they can make sure that we leave in time and that we have as many people that can speak and stuff. With that, do we have any other speakers? Yes, Nick.
Yeah, I could just speak on the topic of hate speech. So when Arthur Pollack gave the charge to the CCEA, hate speech was not a part of that charge. So this policy that will go into effect probably sometime within the semester will not, to our knowledge, actually, you know, create boundaries for what is and what is not hate speech. And it will likely not carve out the university's responsibility. However, the reason that hate speech comes up is because the initial policy draft had a segment that mentioned that hate speech was not the university's service. They weren't going to intervene. Our take is that, yes, the university should have an affirmative responsibility in this domain. So I can concede to Yuching's point, maybe it's not necessarily to, you know, blatantly or broadly curtail, but perhaps we could have been more specific. But it is a can of worms, but I do want to address that. We're not trying to define what hate speech is in this document.
Thank you. Any other
can I clarify? Yes, I don't have a question. Like my question isn't about the presence of the phrase hate speech. My
question is, like, there's a difference between trying to remove speech you don't want and protecting people that is affected by speech you don't want. And I don't like how this document kind of puts those two together without acknowledging the distinction between them.
Thank you. Any other discussion points? Speakers? Mohammed?
Yes. When I'm thinking about what it means to curtail hate speech, I think it is kind of broad, because I think like one means of curtailing hate speech, but I do truly believe that most hate speech that we hear or we see does come from a place of not quite understanding or some ignorance. So I think you can still curtail hate speech considerably just through real earnest efforts to educate on bigotries at large. But that's, yeah, so for, I guess for that kind of reason, I think that curtailing hate speech is it's okay.
Thank you. Any other discussion points? Regarding this resolution, should we pass, not pass it? Any other thoughts? This will go to Alex Lando.
Yeah, I just had one final thought, and I don't think this is going to be come across as worded very well. I haven't considered all the implications of that. But I want to recognize also the fact that we do call upon Dr. King, Gandhi, and Thoreau in the end of this letter. And I understand that this may or may not have been the implication, but it vaguely seems from the wording of this that we are often equating some of the actions of expressive activity to the expressive activity of these individuals. And sort of this view that in the end, all that expressive activity stands for will be viewed as just and right and will change over the course of time. And while I agree that that would be the case for most things, I think it's overstating a little bit the expressive activities that are going on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Apologies for that. Any other discussion points? Yes, Trinica.
Sorry, to your point, this response does not make that connection. Unfortunately, the policy that's been released makes that connection. And we're just saying that it's not right. So to your point, we absolutely agree, which is why we mentioned this in the end, and we have like an entire section about the integrity of the committee. So I think when you guys are thinking about how you want to vote, just please keep in mind that this nothing in this response is recommendations to the policy. It's just a response to the policy. So hate speech, masking, all of these, they're not providing them guidelines or recommendations that say that, hey, it needs to be this way, it doesn't have to be this way. We're talking about what needs to be done more because the policy as it stands today isn't doing enough.
Thank you. Any other discussion points? Yes, Matt.
I think we had a great discussion around this, and the team, just kudos to the team that's put it together. You laid it out very well for us. So I would want to move to the previous question to vote on resolution 6.
All right. Representative James moves to the previous question on this resolution. Is there a second? Second by Garcia Ortiz. Is there any dissent?
Point of order for the super sheet. Make a point of order.
State the order.
Gandhi could be updated the correct spelling by clerical adjustment, and the double negative can also be removed by clerical adjustment. No need for amendment, but we'll vary.
Right. That's for now. Seeing no objections to the previous question, let's go for roll call votes for this resolution. This is an important one, and so that's why I'm going for that instead of a simple hands up, hands down. Anthony, whenever you're ready.
Nicholas Brennan.
Aye.
Cameron Chappell.
Aye.
Jason Shabirka.
Aye.
Oral Douglas. Andy.
Carl, we recognize as abstain in this case.
Okay. Andy Garcia Ortiz. Irene Gatimi. Alicia George.
Aye.
Dinesh Kumar.
Aye.
Shrinika Hampi.
Aye.
Mac James.
Aye.
Ayushi Kapoor.
Aye.
Angie?
Yeah, I said aye.
Perfect.
Motion Kareem.
Abstaining as I am the chair.
Anurag Quayada.
Aye.
Abel Agressa.
Abstaining as I have a conflict of interest.
Alex Landa.
Alex Landa.
Zhongyan Liu.
Aye.
Xander Lynch.
Aye.
Salman Matan.
Aye.
Clarice Meffert.
Aye.
Tien Nguyen.
Aye.
Kunj Patel.
Aye.
Angel Pader.
Aye.
Jenny Xiao. Aye. Issa Yaya.
Issa? Will we recognize as abstain? As she is passed on soon, but has not responded. Did we catch the new?
Yeah. Alicia Basquiat. And Sarah Raimondi.
Abstain.
So that's a.
Did you call my name? Maybe I didn't hear about
you.
Yeah.
I. Thank you for catching that. Yusin Wu.
Aye.
Okay. So that's 21 yeses and 6 abstentions.
All right. And with that, this legislation has officially passed. All right. Seeing that that's all for legislation, we'll now move into new business. So business has been added in. So I will say, do stay tuned. There may be some opportunities for presentations that will be added in future meetings, more exciting resolutions to come by within the committees. So please be sure to come to your committee meetings to help out with those if those happen. And yeah, that's that. We'll move into open forum. Is there anything for open forum?
So I wanted to bring in something. So I recently attended the meeting on coalition of on mental health. And they wanted to do like a focus group with GBSA. So it's going to be like a 70-minute survey with the students, with dinner being provided. It's going to be like some questions on mental health, the feeling of belonging at Cornell and things like that. So if any of you and GBSA are interested in taking part of that survey, do let me know. And if you have any more questions or if like student advocacy or like this wanted to like send it out or something like that, so do let me know and I can provide more details.
Thank you. Anything else for open agenda? Yes, Marvin.
I just wanted to, say that the political climate as of late has been evolving very dramatically, very quickly. So I think just because I am concerned, a lot of people are concerned about some of these executive orders that have been being passed. I think it's very important that we do what we can to expand our capacity and ability to advocate for specifically international students and for students of marginalized communities at large. So that's all I just wanted to be on people's mind.
Thank you. Anything else for open agenda? Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up a conversation that came up at the university assembly meeting last week on Tuesday, I believe. A member of the committee who remembered a time before COVID, where the employee assembly actually had the power to essentially ratify like large policy changes that were related to employee life. And this member of the assembly had brought it up as something, especially as we're looking at the expressed activity policy, which doesn't necessarily deal with day-to-day staffing considerations or the executive branch of Cornell, so to speak, that the assemblies be given more authority to essentially ratify large policy shifts that shape the academic environment, the social culture and climate on campus. And there was discussion of putting forward a bill on the university assembly, and I was also interested in getting a sense of whether we could put something forward like that in GPSA and kind of have a united front amongst the assemblies calling for greater oversight over longer term policy changes to the university. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yes, Ava?
So I could kind of speak on that if you want. The way that it's going to probably go through UA is Campus Codes is going to come forth with a resolution. So y'all can come forward with the resolution as well. And then I would just ask, maybe, perhaps, for y'all to support our resolution in any way, shape, or form. That's all I ask.
Sounds good. Do we have any other points for open data?
I have a question, which I'm not sure whether this is the right place for the question, but because I know Cornell is like nominally a private institution, but parts of it is like public. To what extent are we affected by laws directed at like public institutions or like, you know, like federal, like laws?
Yeah. We're an entirely private institution.
Okay.
With a public mission. But we're a private institution.
Okay.
What about CALS? As an in-state student,
it's private.
It's private. Okay. Even though we get like New York City stuff.
It's private.
Yeah.
Private though, about federal dollars being accepted by Cornell, those could be contingent on changing like executive.
That's a different question, Nicholas.
An important one, I think.
This institution is here by my
Yeah.
All right. Do we have any other points for open agenda? By once, twice, so. All right. At this time, I'm going to entertain a motion to adjourn this legislative session. Is there any votes? Yes, Ivy?
Motion to adjourn.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by everybody and the mothers. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent. All right, meeting adjourned.